riverreporter.com, and from listener donations at wjffradio.org.
Welcome to the local edition, local news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And I don't know if you've heard this, school is in session once again. It's back to school season, but not everybody got back to school on a bus because there aren't as many buses and bus drivers as some school districts in New York State were hoping. To learn more about the busing shortage and whether or not it's impacting local schools, we're going to talk to Nick Vallone from the Rolling V Bus Company. But first, Forestburg Playhouse's Forestburg Academy Outdoor 2021 Fall Theater Intensive Workshops. It's beginning this Saturday. It's called Beyond the Page to the Stage, a fall theater intensive where young artists participate in a guided creative process to imagine and fully realize an original production. On the phone with us now, Forestburg Playhouse Education Directors Kate Wilson and Rocky Berlanga. Hello, Kate and Rocky. How are you doing?
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for having us.
Hi, Jason.
Thanks for being on. So, welcome to the program. Before we get into the fall workshop, you did a similar thing in the summer, correct? How did that go?
Oh, the summer program was really, really incredible. We had 40 young artists attend two sessions, and each session culminated with an original Fractured Fairy Tale musical, which you can actually still find the recordings at the Forestburg Facebook page or the YouTube page. For example, one of our shows was called Beauty and the Beat, which was our take on Beauty and the Beast, but was through the lens of the 80s. And we had over 40 audience members come from over 400 audience members come from of their friends and families. And it was just a really great couple of weeks in the woods.
And so is this for just the average person? Is this for young people? Is this for specifically people that are training in the theater? Who is this program for?
We welcome all young artists. Even if you're not going to aspire to be an actor, all the benefits of going through a training like this can build confidence and self-esteem. And as people are reemerging out of quarantine, it's just good social networking skills as well.
We also, I would say, we have so many young artists that come into our program super shy, really afraid of performing. And by the end, they're, you know, standing on stage, heads held high, really like just sort of fearlessly being themselves. So it really is, like Rocky said, for any young artist or any kid who is just interested in the arts, because it even if they're super shy and super afraid, it's a really cool transformation to watch them build that confidence throughout the program.
What ages are we talking about for this fall workshop?
It's for 8 to 17-year-olds. So pretty wide range.
Yeah, that is a wide range. 8 to 17, do they work together? You split off in groups?
So a little bit of both. Typically they work together, but we definitely have teaching artists who work with the older young artists, and then we have teaching artists who specialize in our younger young artists. So we have teaching artists that specialize in every age, but typically they come together as an ensemble to create the pieces that we put up during the programs.
And you say that, you know, people... the young people that participate, they gain a sense of confidence, especially even those who were shy. So that sounds like one of the things that you're going over. What are some of the basics that you're covering? What are some of the things that you impart to the young people?
So this fall, we're going to focus on having the young artists in the driver's seat of the creative process. Very often when you join a rehearsal process, you're given your script and you're given your music, and it's already established material. And so then through a series of like guided creative exercises and a collection of found material and music, the young artists are going to collaborate with New York City teaching artists to put on an original piece of theater for their friends and family at the end of each session.
Okay, and how many, how long are they working with you? How long, is it multiple sessions or is it multiple classes? What is it like?
Sure, so for the fall specifically, we have two sessions. They're each 2 weekends long. So the first session is the last 2 weekends in September, and the second session is the first 2 weekends in October. They work from approximately 9:30 to 3:30 for this fall program. Summer program was a little bit longer, but 9:30 to 3:30 for 2 weekends per session. And then by the end of those 2 weekends, we have a show, and it's really kind of remarkable.
Okay, is there still room for people?
Totally. We have open registration right now. It can be found at the Forestburg Playhouse website, which is fbplayhouse.org, or you can call the box office. But we have a lot of openings and availabilities right now for both sessions.
And like you said, you did the one in the summer, and you said it was a blast. Are there, what are some standout moments for you from previous workshops that you can tell us?
So I think something that we found to be really incredible during the summer sessions in particular is to see just sort of how crucial arts education has been to young people after a year and change of being in quarantine. So we had all of these parents and young artists just giving us so much feedback about how much of a difference these programs made during their reemerging and the navigating still of the pandemic. One of the parents, we had a couple of standout quotes. One of the parents said, in just one day, I saw so much life and happiness come back into my kid. This experience has brought her back to her normal, bubbly, outgoing, silly self. And we had one of the most touching moments was we had a young artist tell us, when I arrived at camp, I was in a really dark place, and your instruction turned all of that around. And he said, not only have I made so many friends, I found my people. And it was just so powerful to hear him have such an incredible experience connecting with other young artists. And then also just a really super fun moment was in the middle of a show, the sky opened up and it started downpouring. And the young artist just finished the song, belted her face off, and finished her song in the pouring rain before we had to take a rain break. And it was just the most remarkable thing to watch her go. So.
And was that at a summer workshop?
That was at the summer, yeah.
Yeah, because that's like a total summer Sullivan County Catskills memory right there. Like
That's exactly right.
You're going to have some
exactly
rain
right.
on the weekend. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep, but the show went on. That's it.
Good lesson. Talk about people being in a dark place. I mean, I know things are tough. Things can always be tough for kids, especially for teenagers, but it's been a tough year for everybody. It's been tough on students and artists alike. Are you seeing that in the people that you're working with, and does this provide you an opportunity to kind of alleviate some of that stress that's been building up over the last year and a half?
Yes, what we're seeing is that I think it's like you said, it's been really hard for adults, and I think we underestimate how difficult it is for children and young people to not be able to connect with other young people. And so I think what we have found with these programs, even though the last couple have had to be more socially distanced and taking many safety measures and all of that, they still have gotten the chance to be with people their own age. And what it's done is just made them so like full of joy, I think the best way to describe it. These young artists, they are so excited to come every day and hang out with other kids their age. And it's just bringing joy back into their lives. And that's contagious, I would say.
It's definitely reminding them how to be a kid again.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I guess along those lines, how about for you? Like I'm being introduced to you here as education directors for Forestburg Playhouse, but I assume you're performers yourselves, correct?
So I am actually, weirdly enough, I'm a stage manager, a former stage manager. The reason I got involved with the Playhouse is Franklin in 2016 hired me to be the production stage manager at the Playhouse. I did that for 3 years. So my background is actually in stage management. And Rocky?
I'm a director by trade. In 2017, Franklin hired me to be the guest director for Bye Bye Birdie that summer. And then when he had the smart idea to create an education program, he tagged Kate and I because we have a lot of educational theater education in our backgrounds.
Yeah. And Rocky has done some performing, but I'm primarily a tech person, and Rocky has now shifted over into directing.
I started as an actor, yeah. And then I threw that towel in and just became a director.
That's right.
I'm glad I asked, because not just challenging my own assumptions and putting them on display and correcting them, but also, but it shows people that they're, reminds folks that there's a wide range of duties and jobs that people conduct in the arts and in the theater. But given those different hats that you wear, those backgrounds that you have, the closeness that you have to the theater as a career, and then doing this work with the Forestburg Playhouse, what's this pandemic year been like for you, and how are you feeling about things right now?
Well, I think like a lot of theaters had to pivot to the online platform, and I think which was a little cumbersome at first, but they really got our hands around this new way of presenting art. And now coming out of the summer, going into live performances, it's reminding us how to, 5, 6, 7, 8 again without being on a screen.
Yeah. And I think also we've really embraced outdoor theater. I think something Franklin did that was so smart. And he was, one of the first to do it at the Playhouse was these outdoor concerts. And so really figuring out how to effectively do things like outdoor theater safely have been a real challenge in a good way for artists this year to figure out how to make art in creative ways and safe ways. So I think there's been a lot of pivoting this year for us artists, but it's been a good challenge overall, I think.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to tell us about your experience with the young artists, and also this upcoming workshop. More information at fbplayhouse.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Kate Wilson, Rocky Berlanga, the education directors for Forestburg Playhouse. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
And again, we were talking about the Forestburg Academy Outdoor 2021 Fall Theater Intensive Workshops. They're beginning this Saturday. They still have room, and the info is at fbplayhouse.org. This is Radio Catskill. We're keeping you connected with the local edition right here. Stay tuned. More of the program to come.
Radio Catskill. Public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Your NPR station. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill.
Patients can recover a lot of function, whether it's movement, whether it's reading. But a key question that labs like mine are asking is, how do we better enhance that plasticity?
Raymond says answering that question could change education, rehabilitation, and the treatment of brain disorders. John Hamilton, NPR News.
Do we really know about breakthrough infections? Tomorrow afternoon, one of our own reporters shares his story of what it was like to be diagnosed with a case of COVID after vaccination. He also has advice for others experiencing the same thing. Listen on your radio or ask your smart speaker to play NPR or your local station by name. And this is All Things Considered. The price of things like gasoline and groceries keeps going up faster than most Americans are used to. But prices are not rising as fast as they were earlier in the summer. NPR's Scott Horsley joins us now with details on the Consumer Price Index, which came out this morning. Hey, Scott.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. All right, so prices are still rising, but the rising is slowing down. Is that right? Is this good or not so good? Just what is this inflation measure telling us?
Well, do you want the good news or the bad news?
The bad news is
it's still costing more to put gas in the car and food in the fridge. Gasoline prices are up almost 43% over the last year. Beef prices, which we talked about a little bit yesterday, are up more than 12%. Overall inflation in August was 5.3%, though. And while that's high, it's not quite as high as in June and July. Economist Joe Bruzuelas of RSM says the rising price for things like food and fuel was partially offset by falling prices elsewhere.
What we see in the August inflation data is a case of what goes up often comes down.
Used cars, for example, which were a big driver of inflation earlier in the year, got a little bit cheaper in August, and airline tickets got quite a bit cheaper.
All right. So does this mean that the wave of inflation that we saw during the pandemic has actually peaked?
It looks as though we may have seen the crest of the inflationary wave. Both the Federal Reserve and the Biden administration have said repeatedly they thought these spikes in inflation would be temporary or transitory, to use the central bank's term. And today's report lends some support to that. If you look at the monthly price hikes, they were smaller in August and July, smaller in July than June. So there is some sign of cooling off. That said, inflation is still pretty high, and Kathy Pasjancic of Oxford Economics says the cooling off period looks as though it might take a while.
Our view is that this is going to be transitory, but the transitory is going to be longer than what most people thought, and it'll take time.
And a lot of people do seem to be bracing for an extended period of higher inflation. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York came out with a survey this week showing, on average, consumers expect inflation a year from now will still be 5.2%, so just barely lower than it is right now. And 3 years from now, consumers think inflation will still be running around 4%. One thing to keep in mind, Elsa, even when inflation does settle down, it doesn't necessarily mean prices go back to their pre-pandemic levels. Some things might just level off at a new higher price.
Bummer. Okay, so what do you think today's inflation report says about where we are in general after a year and a half of this pandemic?
You know, there's a lot of mixed signals here. Prices are high, but they don't appear to be spiraling out of control. Inflation appears to be cooling off, but very slowly. Even the falling prices are a mixed bag. Some are coming back to earth for what we might call good reasons, like used cars, for example. There was a severe shortage, and those kinks are getting worked out. But the drop in the price of airline tickets and hotel rooms is less solid. That's caused by the surge in coronavirus cases, which is making people more frightened to travel. And Julia Coronado of Macro Policy Perspective says that's not something you want to see.
Overall, obviously, inflation came in below expectations, which is some welcome relief. But the details still point to a very disrupted global economy and one that's still pretty tied to the pandemic.
A lot of people were hoping for some clearer economic signals this fall, but unfortunately, the rise of the Delta variant has just stirred up a lot of storm clouds in the crystal ball.
That is NPR's Scott Horsley. Thank you, Scott.
Good to be with you.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.
Part of the solution to get these kids back in the classroom. It is very good. I spent a lot of time in the first couple of days of school at the school, and it's just such a welcome sight to see, you know, buses, you know, full of smiling kids, and we're assuming they're smiling under their masks, you know, getting back into the classroom.
Yeah, and you know, I to be clear, just part of what you said there is like this shortage hasn't affected the operation of any of the school districts in the listening area in Sullivan County that you're working with so far, correct?
Well, it certainly affected everybody, but again, it was pre-planning and knowing, you know, knowing our situation, knowing where our driver pool stood entering the year and making plans. So, you know, there was some modifications to some schedules. So maybe a slight disruption, but we were able to get ahead of the issue rather than have to deal with a crisis on day one.
Right. It's impacted everything that you're doing, but it hasn't severely altered what people were expecting in terms of service on day one.
That's correct.
Okay. And now, so you're also vice president of the State School Bus Contractors Association. So that says to me that you're in touch with people at the state level on this. What is being done to address this issue on that level, and what communication is going on between, you know, the drivers, people that provide the service, such as yourself, business owners, and any of the state regulatory bodies to address this issue?
Yeah, so we as an association, you know, Rolling Via Side, have been, you know, at the forefront of you know, solution planning from day one. You know, some negative things that happened at the state level, which may be driver issue worse, is, you know, when the DMVs were closed, when we could not get permit tests, we could not get road tests. So that created a bit of a log jam. So we worked very closely with New York State DMV and DOT to work through a solution for that. And fortunately, you know, now that situation has resolved.
We've as we understand it, one New York State Senator Representative Joseph Morrell is proposing that the State Department of Transportation get rid of the commercial driver's license requirement for bus drivers to create a school bus specific license that's a bit easier to achieve. And that would help address this issue, but that would change where the bar is set for school bus drivers. What do you think about that solution, and is that in keeping with the sorts of things that you're looking at?
Well, I think it's creative, but one of the things that really lets me sleep well at night is knowing how well vetted and well trained a school bus driver is. Because unlike delivery trucks, although we provide same day delivery twice a day, we're not delivering packages. We're delivering, you know, students, and these are, you know, our most precious cargo. So I'm in support of anything that allows us to get more people into the workforce, but it's got to be done safely. And one of the things that we're discussing at the state association level is third party testing. So we can deploy our 19A certified examiners that we employ here within our companies across the state to administer permit testing and perhaps even road testing to help deal with this backlog of appointments that the DMV, you know, has experienced over the years.
Along those lines, just you're looking for anything that'll get more drivers in the seat, as you said. What are some other what would you tell people, or what are you telling people as you're trying to get more drivers in the seats? What do people not know about the work that you do that you might want them to know?
Yeah, that's a great question, and this is a great opportunity for me to say to the public, you know, if you're looking for work or interested in a career change, to certainly explore the option. I mean, it's great for you know, younger people, although you must be 21, to get their professional career started and start to work in some structure. It's great for people that have other obligations, but that can work a couple hours in the morning or a couple hours in the afternoon. And it's great for people who are retired but looking for, you know, something to fill their day. It's 180 days of work a year, and you make a real difference in your community. So we do a lot of advertising, and we do a lot of promotion about the career, you know, both locally and at the state level, to try to you know, convince people to consider this as a job option, because I think it's you know, one of the few that I can say confidently you can walk into any school bus company across the state, and they're hiring.
And, you know, I did notice this summer, especially, maybe they were starting before that, but this summer I really started noticing the ads, the spots that I think it's your dad is doing on some of the neighboring commercial radio stations. Like, they kind of always make me laugh, but they're, you know, basically saying what you're saying there. It's like, hey, did you think about driving a bus?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've gotten more and more creative through this with some you know, different approaches to try to get people's attention. So I'm glad that made it across your radar.
Yeah, and like I say, it's not even on my radio station, but even I heard them. So there you go. And speaking of getting creative, and I mean, if there's one thing this pandemic's done to us, apart from alter the labor, available labor force and the ways that people work, it's also forced us all to get creative. And I know that back in April, School Transportation News did a story about a partnership between your company, Rolling V, and Sullivan County for a mobile classroom. That was part of reimagining schooling and transportation. Can you give us an update about that project and that special school bus?
Yeah, that was a great project, still ongoing. We worked with Sullivan County BOCES. Dr. DeFore over there, the superintendent, was a real champion of that project. Aileen Gunther's office, as well as Sullivan 180. We converted a school bus to have workstations, heat and internet access remotely, so we could bring it to areas or use it at the schools for extra classroom space at the times where students were remote. Again, I think it's great that the kids are back in the classroom, but I also think it's great that this county and that team that I had mentioned, got ahead of potential situations, and we have that as an option going forward.
Well, Nick Vallone, I want to thank you for joining us, and also want to wish you the best of luck as you continue to try to keep the wheels on the bus going round and round.
Thank you very much. Everybody that's listening, come drive a bus.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay, and again, that was Nick Vallone, who's the vice president of the State School Bus Contractors Association in New York, and also the executive vice president of Rolling V Bus Corporation here in Sullivan County, is speaking with us on the phone. Conversation recorded earlier today. And that's going to do it for the local edition. Local news and information. We keep you connecting the Catskills of Northeast Pennsylvania. I want to thank everybody that helped make this show possible today. I want to thank our guests for talking to us. I want to thank you for listening. And if you were listening but you didn't hear all of the edition podcasts from Radio Catskill, wherever you get podcasts, we're out there in the whole wide world of podcasting for you to sign up so you never miss an episode. And if we aren't where you usually find podcasts, drop us a line here at Radio Catskill, because we want to know about that. We want to be everywhere where people can find us. We're also, as always, online at wjffradio.org. Thanks again for listening. You want to stay tuned. We got Kusar Grace Music Emporium coming right up, right here, Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Women's Health Center in Honesdale, Hamlin, Waymart, Carbondale, and Lords Valley in Pennsylvania. Physicians and certified midwives who deliver. The Women's Health Center is a Wayne Memorial Community Health Center. WMH.org. From Sullivan Renaissance, a community beautification initiative of the Geary Foundation, dedicated to empowering volunteers to build beautiful, active communities in Sullivan County for over 20 years. SullivanRenaissance.org.
We hope you're enjoying the great community connection that Radio Catskill provides. And we're delighted to bring you some light, some insight, some hope, some love into your day with Undercurrents. I'm Greg McVicar. And along with our other hosts, like Gabriella, we handpick new releases, forgotten gems, and music packed with culture and meaning. We call it Music with Your Mind in Mind. We hope you'll check it out. Undercurrents at noon, right here on WJFF.
The Radio Catskill Community Awards, September 30th, honoring our healthcare heroes for making a difference, for putting the well-being of others above all else, for staying strong in these unprecedented times, including Nancy McGraw, Sullivan County Public Health. Join us at Calicoon Hills, September 30th. Ticket information at wjffradio.org. The Radio Catskill Community Awards, honoring our healthcare heroes.
This is Radio Catskill.
Public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
WJFF Jeffersonville.
On air, online, on your smartphone, and on your smart speaker. We are Radio Catskill.